morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective, your dynamic Democratic program on the air. And sitting across from me is Michael Cosentino.
Yeah. Mike's here. We're not, I don't know. It's hard to be jovial radio guys. The Democratic Perspective has always been about social justice. I mean, that's racial justice. And it's kind of exciting in a way, and it's kind of scary in a way to be living in a time when some of these things are being looked at in such a way, with such crowds in the streets and violence and all of this.
Karen, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, so we're going to start the show off, folks, with Karen McClellan is going to talk to us about a couple of different issues. And then we'll start the show, which is on climate change, with Professor Stefan Sommer. Karen, so what's going on with DORA and what's going on with education issues?
Okay, I'll just take a quick mention. Our next DORA monthly breakfast in June is still going to be a Zoom meeting. We're going to also be talking about some environmental issues, property, environmental protection, you know, land protection, land use. We have Bill Mundell, who's running for the Arizona Corporation Commission as a guest, and Donna Michaels, who's running for supervisor for Yavapai County in District 3, which is us here in Sedona in the Verde Valley. So we're going to talk about some sort of, you know, national issues and Arizona and some local issues along those lines, things that the supervisors and the Arizona Corporation Commission would be involved in for alternate energy, you know, land use, all of those sort of issues. So be sure to tune in so it should be a really good show because those are both important offices that we need to get Democrats elected to this year. So.
And you can go to the DORA website to do this, Karen?
If the information isn't up on the DORA website, if you just send us a message through that, I don't know, we don't have Zoom links up yet, but okay. To send a message through that one, if it's not up and you can't find it, just send a message and we'll send you the information.
So what's going on with education now that you wanted to talk about?
Well, there's a lot of things on education. One thing we all know is that Arizona is going to be facing a deficit in its budget due to all the shutdown from the COVID. So education funding is going to be a big issue at the special session that they're calling sometime in probably late this month and then next year as well. And also we all know that because of COVID, all the people who are collecting signatures for various, you know, ballot initiatives, most of those had to shut down because they weren't going to get the signatures. The only one left collecting signatures is an education initiative. It's called Invest in Ed. This is one which would increase funding specifically for teacher salaries. What it will do if it gets on the ballot and passes is if your income is more than $250,000, which is only 1% of people in Arizona, at that top income, you'd pay an extra surcharge in income tax on your income over $250,000. And that would go to provide a steady stream of funding to increase teacher salaries and also for, you know, all the support staff that work in the schools, the bus drivers, the secretaries.
So to be dedicated to salaries of staff. How much is Sedona Oak Creek asking for an increase in teacher salaries?
Yeah, this would be
how much of an increase will it be, do you know?
I don't know exactly because it obviously with the whole thing with this year, we don't really, you know, it's going to depend on what the income tax collections are, but it would be a 3.5% in income tax surcharge on income over $250,000.
Right. Okay.
I read where Mingus is asking 7% for their teachers.
Yeah. Most of us in our areas, we raised our teacher salary 7% as well, but we all know that we're probably looking next year at, you know, certainly no increase and maybe a decrease in state funding. So this will really help on making sure that we've got that income coming in for teachers. Yeah, part of the money would also go towards career and technology education and, you know, mentoring programs for new teachers and a little bit of money towards teacher training in universities. So it's All right, Karen. Thanks. Money for teachers.
So, Karen, quickly, if someone supports this, what should they do?
Yeah, there's still a few chances to sign the petitions. We're going to have three drive-through petition signing drives. So you just drive your car in, and somebody will hand you the petition through the window, you know, along with a new pen and everything, so it's sort of as contactless as possible. On June 13th in Cottonwood at the Old Town Activity Park, you know, they're off of Main Street near the Red Rooster restaurant. June 20th outside the Camp Verde Library, and June 27th in the parking lot for the door office at 105 Roadrunner Drive. And they'll each be from 10 a.m. to noon. So you can drive through and, you know, sign a petition at that time. If you've got some friends you know that you're getting together with, some, you know, and you want to pick up a petition and collect signatures yourself, if you send a message, go to our Democrats of the Red Rocks Facebook page and send a message. Click on the send a message, and we can get blank petitions to you. I have blank petitions.
Okay, Karen. Thank you.
Three last chances to get this on the ballot.
Karen, thank you very much for being with us. And you can find out probably more information on the DOOR website about this. Karen's a long-term member of the Sedona School Board.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Bye-bye. So, Klaus, what are we talking about today? We have
we're going to talk about climate change. I'm going to introduce him. The topic is 2020 vision for the future.
Okay. And climate change is one of those things that is happening, and we still have so much of the population want to stick their head in the sand and not do anything and not recognize that this is a major human issue. I mean, they just want to stick their head in the sand and hope for the best somehow.
Yeah, I don't get it. As coastlines disappear, as countries, you know, I was listening to somebody yesterday. Do you tell a 7-year-old that Bangladesh is going to sink into the sea? I mean, how do you break people into climate change and the human devastation that is we're 10 or 11 years away from, and I guess maybe it's the time. Unless Palm Beach is starting to sink into the Atlantic Ocean, we're not worried about it. So let's have another beer.
Klaus, have we got our guest on the line?
Apparently, we don't yet.
All right. I'm
going to have to call him, I suspect.
Well, he's calling now. So why don't you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, I will when I introduce him.
Now would be a good time.
He's on. Stefan?
Hey, Stefan?
Yes, hi.
All right.
Hey, well, welcome to the show. This is who we have with us today. Stefan Sommer, and as he explains it, he was made in Germany and born in the U.S. So that's part of the story. The big part of the story, however, is that as a child and young man, he spent a lot of time with Native Americans, lived in a Native American community, and that generated his interest in the environment because, as you know, Native Americans have a close connection to the living world around us. And so now Stefan Sommer is a professor at NAU and teaches. Do you teach climate change, Stefan, or what exactly is it that you teach?
Well, so, yeah, as a result of growing up around a sweat lodge with a bunch of Paiutes during my formative years, I went off to UC Berkeley to get a degree in ecology. And understanding how the world works became a big part of my life. And then as an ecologist, I got more and more into climate change because climate change is now affecting all systems across the entire globe. And so you can't really study ecology anymore without looking closely at climate change.
Now, the title for today is, as you told us, 2020 vision for the future. So what's the future you know, starting from here on, what does it look like and what are the alternatives? What happened if and what happens if not?
Well, was it Mike a moment ago who was just saying that climate change is coming? Really, it's been here for some time already. It is already devastating human populations. We have tens of millions of people being displaced by climate disasters of one sort or another every year. And that's been going on for many years already. So already our agricultural systems are being affected and shifted. Corn production in Canada is already increasing. And in some cases, the land values for corn-producing lands in Canada have been rising in value steadily year after year, whereas in places like Iowa, in some years, they drop. So we're already seeing shifts of agricultural productivity to the north. You mentioned a moment ago about sea level rise in Florida. Well, Miami, back in 2017... was already reporting a 7% decline in real estate values along the coast because of the threat of sea level rise. So these are not future distant impacts. They're things that are happening now.
Well, that's the scary part. It's also maybe that's the enormity of the problem that seems to not have everybody talking about it. Of course, there's so much going on, but it seems like anybody that steps back, there's nothing bigger than climate change. There's nothing going to impact more human beings. There's nothing going to cause more refugees. There's nothing going to cause more property damage. And yet it is an afterthought on most agendas. I know I'm not asking for the answer. I'm here looking at a poem that I posted on Facebook. Henry Crow Dog was a Lakota Sioux, and he said, "The earth is a living thing. Mountains speak. Trees sing. Lakes can think. Pebbles have souls. Rocks have power." And someone that has spent time in the Native American community and of any stripe knows the special relationship that they have with the land. And I know I'm generalizing, but this is I'm just asking where can we begin here? How can we make some impact on the collective consciousness of climate change?
Well, it's a struggle. In the United States, it's really different than the rest of the world. If you look at people's feelings and attitudes about climate change in all parts of the world other than the United States, people are aware. People are scared. In the United States, there's been a huge campaign to suppress understanding of climate change. And so it's a mixed bag here, and people are often confused because they get different messages from different sources.
I see.
Just to be clear, the scientific community has been fully aware that not only is climate change happening, since 1990, we had clear evidence that it was happening, that it had already changed systems, and since 1992, we've known that current climate change is caused by human activities, period. There are lots of variables that affect our climate, of course, but the current climate changes that we're seeing are caused solely by human activity.
And what are the human activities?
The scientific community.
What are the human activities, Stefan, that contribute the most? This starts with the Industrial Revolution, right? The increase of CO2 and methane and... What are the different factors, and do we deal with them individually or as a complex?
Well, very good question. So it has been primarily the massive burning of fossil fuels. It started in the 1800s, at a smaller scale, but we have been ramping up our use of fossil fuels, and that has really changed the balance of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, which basically thickens the blanket, the insulating blanket. It keeps in more of the heat that we receive from the sun.
So the sun varies from year to year.
There are some other components. In addition to greenhouse gases, we are also, by tilling the soil on massive acreage across the globe every year, we're greatly speeding up the decomposition of the carbon that's stored in our soils. And so a lot of that CO2 from that decomposition of carbon in the soil also ends up in the atmosphere. So it's primarily fossil fuels, but there are other things. Cement production is also another big source of CO2.
So this is a complex problem. I think most people don't know that just – they know about deforestation causing climate change, but they don't know that just tilling the soil causes a release of CO2.
It does. And so people are talking about what they're calling regenerative agriculture, where we put more of the, you know, the waste biomass from agricultural harvest back into the soil. And in some farming areas, people are still doing that, but the more we go towards industrialized agriculture, it's all about quick turnaround, machinery, those kinds of things, and so we're putting less and less of that carbon back into the soil. And we quickly need to reverse that. We need to put more carbon back into the soils, which would have a significant effect on our emissions, but it still wouldn't begin to pull some of the CO2 back out of the atmosphere because we've put in massive amounts. We've put in over 2 trillion tons of CO2 equivalent into the atmosphere so far.
So,
is there any way besides stopping it or slowing it down, is there any way to actually reverse that, or is that that permanent?
There are many people who are working on how we can take some of that CO2 back out of the atmosphere. So far, we don't really have a solid way. Certainly, regrowing forests can take some of that CO2 back out of the atmosphere. There's a group, Climeworks, in Switzerland that is working on taking CO2 out of the air by putting it through amine filters. And they've applied that in Greenland, where they use the waste heat from geothermal plants so they can take a good amount of CO2 back out of the atmosphere with out having to burn a lot of fossil fuels to do it. And so that's a good step in the right direction, but it's really at the experimental level at this point, not even the hobby level. It's nowhere near being enough to take all the CO2 back out of the atmosphere.
We're talking to Dr. Stefan Sommer, Director of Education at the Marion Powell Center for Environmental Research. But you've co-produced and have produced some really interesting films on and written some right on point things on climate change. So let's talk about A River Reborn, the restoration of Fossil Creek. It says you were executive producer of that. We're talking about another treasuring our national heritage. You have a radio show, Spotlight on Climate Change. What's going on with these media things?
So, yeah, I've been involved in outreach on climate change in every way I can think to do, because it is really the crisis that is facing humanity at this time, and it's what we'll be facing for a long time to come. So I'm really eager to change that misperception, particularly within the United States, about climate change and help people understand what's happened so far and what's coming. So I look to do that in all sorts of ways, including talking on this radio show with y'all. So thank you all for having me on.
We were talking about mitigation, Stefan, and you were saying that there are some wonderful experiments and small-scale practices on mitigation of climate change, but it's still not contributing anything like to the real solution of climate change at this point. Reforestation is an example, for example, using low-carbon energy. These efforts are good, but they're not really undoing the impact of the burning of fossil fuels, right?
Yeah, so we need to keep on regrowing our forests. We need to make our soils, our agricultural soils, become a carbon sink again rather than a carbon source. And there are a lot of people working on these plans, particularly for plans to reduce our emissions. And we have the technology in hand for reducing our emissions. We do have non-carbon-based sources of energy like wind and solar and geothermal and wave and tidal power. And there's a plan put out by a group out of Stanford University, Jacobson et al., 2018, called the Solutions Project, and they're a group of engineers that have calculated for 139 countries around the globe how they could reach net zero by 2050 using technologies that we already have in hand. So, and that's not the only plan that people have put out. Many people are looking at this, and some solutions have been put forward. The challenge now is to get everybody on board so we can actually implement these solutions.
Well, that's it. I think you put your finger on it, Doc. We've been asking this question since certainly not only you, but our last few climate speakers. But you put your finger right on it. It's that we feel and we hear, as you said, the engineers are working on it. The plans are there are plans. There is progress. There are solutions. And so most of us now you're saying we need to get on board. So these programs need support before they come to. Like I said, I think one of the reasons people aren't worried about it because we say, hey, they're working on it. They're going to figure it out. We're going to be okay. And that may or may not be true. So when you say people got to get on board for these things, what do you mean by get on board? What do we got to do?
Yeah, let me ask a follow-up question to that. Who are the big polluters? It's the United States and China. And is China ahead of us in trying to mitigate it? We're really not.
Well, let me answer the first question first. We do all need to get on board. And one way to do that here in Northern Arizona is to join the Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance. We've been around for 4 or 5 years, and I serve on the board of directors for NASCA. You can find out more about NASCA if you want to join in on any of our outreach programs or any of our activist work. You can learn more at www.nazcca.org.
Why don't you give that to us again, Stefan, so people catch it. And also the name of the organization. Just give us a little repeat here.
Yeah, it's the Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance, and the website is www.nazcca.org, and that's NAZCCA.org. So NASCA does a lot of work, and we were involved in getting the city of Flagstaff to pass a climate action and adaptation plan back in 2018. We have also been involved with the city of Sedona, who recently also announced that they are going to put together a climate action plan. And in fact, I should tell you all that today, tomorrow, and Thursday, there are going to be open houses in Sedona where you can make your voice heard by joining in on the conversation about how to structure the climate action plan for Sedona. To find out more about those open houses, go to sedonaaz.gov/climate.
That's so it's the main
sedona.gov/climate. And on that page, you will be able to see where the open houses are and they're all on Zoom, so you need to register so that you can participate. There's one this afternoon, an open house from 4:30 to 5:45 p.m. There's one tomorrow from 10 a.m. until 11:15 a.m. And then again on Thursday from 5:30 to 6:45 p.m. So please, if you're in the Sedona area and in the Verde Valley, please join in. The plan is Sedona-specific, but they do have a lot of information on how climate change is expected to affect the entire Verde Valley.
Well, that's great. Those open houses will talking about Sedona's action plan for climate change. People from Cottonwood, people from Camp Verde, people from Jerome can listen in and maybe apply those to their towns. People are looking for a way to do something. I know that our mayor, Tim Alinsky, has spoken at some of Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance functions. So he is certainly a supporter and aware of it. Now, getting the city council to go along with anything like Sedona, like a climate change or like an action plan is maybe a bridge too far, but at least for now. But that's the impact of having these open houses. So please, as Dr. Stefan Sommer, who we're talking to, is telling you, check out the, see if you can get in on these Zoom meetings for these.
And they're on Sedona City Government's website. You can go there, as Dr. Sommer is saying, and find the open house. It's probably right from the first page, and that'll give you information of how to participate in what's happening with Sedona.
Stefan,
I did look at the website yesterday, and it is a little bit complicated. So again, just go to sedonaaz.gov/climate, and that'll take you right to the page.
Thank you,
Stefan. There are a number of cities around the United States who have goals for zero emission by, you know, some 2030. Is that going to make an impact, or is that just, a drop of water on a hot stone?
It all makes a difference. There are many cities, you know, where our federal government isn't necessarily fully on board with climate action. Many cities. Thousands of cities in the United States have already put together climate action plans. And so if your city council is not doing that, you've got to make it clear to them that they are behind the times. They need to catch up with the rest of the world and start doing things, because if we don't turn around our carbon emissions and if we don't start adapting to the changes, people are going to be high and dry in so many different ways.
To my other question, who are the big polluters, and is China doing more to mitigate this than the U.S. is actually doing nothing, right, except for this individual?
Well, yeah, so the cities in the United States have been doing quite a bit, but the federal government has been backing away from things like the Paris Accord. Fortunately, the rest of the world is not backing away from their commitments to reduce emissions. China is a big source of CO2, and they have recognized it, at least in the sense that they know that the people in their cities have been suffering from air pollution in a huge way, and so they are starting to take very seriously reducing their emissions for direct human health reasons, as well as overall climate change reasons. So they're very well positioned now. If we do follow the recommendations in the Paris Climate Accord, then they are very well positioned to supply the world with solar energy technology and wind power technology. And really, that's where we should be. That's our country should be at the forefront of those kinds of technologies, so that as the world converts, which it will, that we're in a position to build our economy on that. Instead, we have been so bought into the dinosaur technologies, I call them, the fossil fuel technologies, that we are not well positioned to supply the world with alternative energy. But China will, they see the future, they will take advantage.
And sadly, the United States was ahead in so many ways for a long time, and now, you know, it's not, right? I mean, especially with what's happened in the last 4 years, which hopefully will change on November 3rd. But we have a lot of catch-up to do.
A lot of work to do. So another good thing, though, there is a NASCA group, Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance group, in Cottonwood, and they have been starting to make presentations to the city council as frequently as they can to get the city of Cottonwood to also begin looking into risk assessments and climate action plans. There's a group in Prescott as well, a strong NASCA group in Prescott that is beginning to make plans on how to work with their city council to get them to follow the example of Flagstaff and Sedona and also develop climate action plans. So if you want to start making a difference here in the Verde Valley, in Sedona, Cottonwood, Prescott, or Flagstaff, please do get involved with NASCA and lend your voice. Back in January, we had 268 folks show up for the Flagstaff City Council meeting, asking the Flagstaff City Council to declare a climate emergency and to implement the climate action and adaptation plan in the strongest possible way. And everybody could make a three-minute statement. The three-minute statements went from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. People were passionate. It made a difference. The entire city council, every single member, pledged to declare a climate emergency and implement the climate action and adaptation plan strongly, and us, and also our mayor, Coral Evans. So they listen. Our leaders listen to voices. We need as many voices as possible. So please join in with NASCA. Go to city council meetings. Go to these open houses for Sedona, because Sedona has decided to put together an action plan, and they need all the support that they can get.
That's a great example, Dr. Summer, that Flagstaff had almost 300 people. I mean, that's how many people were concerned about climate, and that the city council let them speak, and no matter how long the meeting lasted. And here we got, and now it's spread to Sedona. We got Sedona working on an action plan. We've had, I don't know, Beverly Hedden and others from the Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance have spoken at the city council of Cottonwood. And other, they're often at our Democratic meetings, if not physically anymore, that's still in a virtual space where the, Yavapai County Democrats-Cottonwood are still meeting on their Tuesday, on their third Tuesdays, and climate is often a topic. So it is happening. If you're interested, there's many, many ways of getting involved here, through, like we said, through the Northern Arizona, group, the Climate Change Alliance, that, is very active and an educational, arm of all of this. That's why, one of the reasons we have Dr. Stefan Summer on today, because he's done so much and is certainly a spokesman for this organization and so many other things. I'm interested in the other productions that you've been involved with in trying to get this climate change message out. What about these other things that you've done to tell us about climate change?
Yeah, if you want to get active but you're not sure, you know, really what's going on with climate change, then, again, on the NASCA.org website, several of my presentations on climate change are recorded there, and I go over climate change basics in one called Climate Change Cause and Cascading Consequences. I go over future issues and current and future issues in climate refugees and Arizona's future is another presentation. And then the third presentation I make is about climate change building a path forward? How do we solve these issues? If you want to look at A River Reborn, The Restoration of Fossil Creek, that's a film that we produced for public broadcast, and it's a local environmental story, and the beauty of that story really is that in spite of major environmental conflict, people came together and collaborated. And it was various environmental groups, various Native American groups, and APS, a major corporation, all ended up coming to the conclusion that Fossil Creek was better as a free-flowing stream than as a source of hydropower. Now, and hydropower is clean energy, but it was much less than 1% of the overall production, and they realized that so many species depended on that free-flowing river that the balance was in favor of letting it flow free again.
Do you have any recommendations for talking to people who are skeptical about climate change? We run into a lot of them. I know that a lot of times people go, well, just don't even bother talking to them because if they don't understand it by now, they won't. But is there anything that that folks can do? Is there a technique or a way to talk to people who maybe are, don't not believe it but are just skeptical?
Well, that's a really important question, too, because we really all need to become voices for climate change and bring our family, our friends, and everybody we bump into on board. It's a difficult thing for folks who have bought into the fossil fuel industry's doubt about climate change. It can be hard to reach through. The main advice I can give you is if it's somebody that you know how they think, you know their values, start with the things that you can agree on. Start with the things, their love for the great outdoors. Start with those things that they find important. If the economy is important, talk to them about how agricultural production is shifting northward and out of the United States. You know, talk about how real estate values are changing. Talk about the increased frequency of wildfires. Talk about those things like, I don't know so much the detail about Sedona, but up here in Flagstaff, for the last few years, we've been having mosquitoes, which we used to never have. Now we've got regular occurrence of mosquitoes every summer, and we're expecting to see rises in mosquito-borne diseases.
Why I've noticed it since, well, we should get too much on mosquitoes, Stefan, but I've noticed a rise in mosquitoes in Sedona. From when I first moved here in 2003, we didn't really have a mosquito problem. And coming from the east, where if you go outside, if you're up in the country, the mosquitoes are a major problem. I came out here and there was nothing. And now it seems to me that some years we have quite a few in Sedona. What's causing that, or can you answer that?
Well, it's the rise in temperature that has helped them to complete their life cycles more efficiently. So far, we have not seen Aedes aegypti, which is really one of the major disease-carrying species of mosquito. So fortunately, they haven't hit us yet, but in the near future, we can expect that particular mosquito species to add to the mix here in northern Arizona, and then Zika virus and a wide variety of other diseases could follow. So there's potential for not only increase in disease levels for things like West Nile, but also the addition of whole new diseases that we haven't seen in northern Arizona before.
Well, that's not a very great, exciting prospect, but I like what you say about trying to talk to people who are maybe skeptical about climate change, and just not assuming that they're ignorant, but try to relate to them on values that you share. And I think particularly if you know someone, that's an excellent strategy. Any other I guess there's two problems. One is understanding the complexity of climate change, which the science is getting better and better at. There's been a great progress in understanding. And the other is the political struggle to get people to realize that they need climate change.
Well, the name of the show is Democratic Perspective. This is only one party that is blocking this, and it's the Republicans. I mean, Democrats aren't perfect by a long shot, but when it comes to this issue, and so many others, there's the reason on a national level we're not talking as much about climate change and we're not acting on climate change is pretty simple. The Republicans are in power. They need to be out of power so we can save the world and save Palm Beach and everything else. So I'm the radical here on the show, and as you can maybe tell, Doctor, and we want to, but I'm listening to you now. So as temperatures rise, we have mosquitoes, those annoying things, but not only are they annoying, they are disease carrying. We're talking about your pets, we're talking about animals, we're talking about humans, and as the other thing I see is as water becomes more scarce as temperatures rise, that creates conflict, doesn't it, Doctor?
Yes. Well, an important thing is to tell folks that the effects of climate change are nonpartisan.
Yeah.
Everybody is going to have to suffer through the consequences of climate change equally. And so it's really important for us to all understand that whatever our political persuasion, we've all been addicted to this easy, cheap source of energy, namely fossil fuels, and we need to break our addiction. One of the things that, the whole COVID-19 crisis has caused me to isolate, and what I'm realizing is I'm happier when I don't get in my car, when instead I walk somewhere. it's a freeing, life-altering thing not to get in the car every day.
I want to mention before we wrap it up, and we've only got 2 minutes later, is that next week we're going to have Dr. Neil Singer, and we're going to be talking about the plan to not get rid of the emergency room, but to downgrade the emergency room in Sedona to an immediate care facility. If you're concerned about emergency services, and Sedona's average population is 56, and if you figure that, a one-year-old, the actual mean is much higher than the average. So tune in next week, folks. I think we're going to have a special, very topical show.
Mike. Yeah, there's a lot of people that live in Sedona because of there is an emergency center here. They know that they can get care right away. That has been the source of comfort for a long. Now, we'll talk about what downgrade means. I don't know what downgrade means, but it certainly sounds like less care.
We'll find out next week, Michael.
Neil Singer will be talking about downgrading the Sedona Medical Center, which is, like I say, a lot of people live here because it's here. It's going to be an interesting discussion, and this is also kind of this is not headlines. Northern Arizona Healthcare isn't bragging about this. It's another cost cutting move that to me doesn't make sense. Don't forget, folks. Democratic Perspective is on Facebook. There are many people enjoying watching us live right now, checking out my hat and my bald spot. I guess I can't do both. But anyway, we want to make sure that you know that VVID, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org, will have this podcast and all our podcasts on VVID.org. VVID.org has the shows. Check them out. And wonderful summaries written by Gary LeMaster. Thanks, folks. See you next time.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZ. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.